Thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Paris Schutz. Jurors get to hear former Alderman Ed Burke try and land the proverbial tuna.
You know, if we're not signed up, I'm not going to do any lifting for this guy.
Undercover video evidence purports to show Alderman Ed Burke trying to get a taste of the business on a big real estate deal in exchange for official action.
So far, we had no... The cash register has not rung yet.
Prosecutors outline his alleged scheme that involved the renovation of the giant Old Main Post Office.
We will overcome this humanitarian crisis, and we will do it together.
Construction begins on migrant camps in Brighton Park. When will migrants be able to move in from the cold? Chicago City Council proposes controversial new rules to limit the public from attending City Council meetings. Election 2024 is underway as candidates file their petitions to run for office. And in sports.
Play clock at four. Good snap, good hold, good kick. Bears are back on top.
The Bears get in the win column after a strong defensive effort. And the Blackhawks roiled in controversy again after dismissing co-captain Corey Perry.
A lot of news today alone and this week, and joining us all to wade through it are Chris Jones from the Chicago Tribune, our very own Heather Sharon, Melody Mercado from Block Club Chicago, and Phil Thompson from the Chicago Tribune. I want to get to a late-breaking story from Crane's Chicago Business this evening. They're reporting that a federal agency and the inspector general are investigating the bidding process that landed Bally's, the lone Chicago casino contract. What do we know about this, Chris Jones?
Well, they're arguing there was irregularities in how they got the contract, that the way they dealt with minority ownership and things like that. But there's a bit of a history here of the sort of the disgruntled losing bidders keeping this alive. There's definitely a sense that the casino story is not yet fully written, even though theoretically construction's about to start pretty much where I work. So it's going to be an interesting story. I don't think we've heard the last of the whole.
That's right. They're going into, eventually, we think, the area where the Tribune offices and printing plant are right now. Melody Mercado, Mayor Lightfoot, said it's just sour grapes from the other folks. Do you think that's what it is? They're just trying to maybe scuttle the process after it's already done?
I mean, this was a very big win for the Lightfoot administration. So I feel that she's not going to let go of this victory, and she's definitely not going to admit if there is, quote-unquote, sour grapes.
She's off enjoying her post-mayoral life right now, also maybe not enjoying their post-public life. Ed Burke, Heather Sharon, so you heard him in his own words this week, quote, the cash register has not rung yet, quote, did we land the tuna? How did those quotes hit?
Well, you know, it's hard to tell because it has already been a very long trial and the jurors showed very little emotion, although the part of the tape that got the most reaction that I've seen from the jury was when Ed Burke sort of explained the reluctance of the developer of the Old Main Post Office, or the redeveloper, I should say, that they didn't want to hire him perhaps because they're Jewish and he's Catholic. And he said quite clearly, well, you know, Jews, they like to hire some of their own. And there were a couple grimaces on the jurors. Now, Ed Burke's lawyers tried to keep that tape out of court, and they failed. And it will be interesting to hear, once we can talk to the jurors, sort of what they made of this, especially at this moment of increased tension with Israel and Hamas, and of course, all of these horrible anti-Semitic incidents happening all around us. The fact of the matter is that the prosecutors have now made it through the bulk of their case. They started on the fourth and final sort of alleged criminal scheme today. We have about 6 days left in the prosecution's case. Then the defense will get a chance. Both Ed Burke, Pete Andrews, and Charles Quay will get a chance to make their case to the jury. So it's been sort of halting progress, but we are coming into the home stretch, hard enough to believe.
So Chris Jones, are outlining this alleged scheme involving the renovation of the Old Main Post Office. So the developer there, he needs to work with Amtrak, which owns the tracks below the building, to get some air rights. He needs to work with the city to get some TIF money. Who does he call? Ed Burke. So what is the story that prosecutors tell about this alleged scheme?
Well, I mean, when you've got a quote like, the cash register's not yet rung, I mean, come on. I mean, that is it's sort of agony to hear it about from an elected representative. The other part of this story that I think is sort of disappointing is all the people around Burke who are playing his game. And that's, so this kind of case ensnares a lot of, I suppose
it
you
sounds
might say,
like they feel like they have to. They have no choice, especially the Field Museum folks and this developer. It's like, I guess this is how you do business in Chicago.
Yeah, but do you, though, have a choice? I mean, you could say, we're just not going to do that. The problem is for years in Chicago is nobody's actually said that. But I find it, you know, it's disappointing to see the genuflecting that went on from these outside parties. I'm not, you know, saying they're to blame. Burke is clearly the guy in the dock, so to speak. But it's still disappointing to me.
Phil Thompson, when you look at these tapes or you hear some of the recordings, does it tell a pretty convincing story here? Or, as Rod Blagojevich said, play all the tapes. You haven't heard everything yet. Yes.
Well, I'm all for playing all the tapes. I think one of the most interesting things I've heard is, you know, this testimony from the Burger King people saying that they were trying to shake them down. I mean, who tried to shake down Burger King? Like, hire our tax firm and you can have it your way.
Yeah. You were not thinking about that on the drive there, were you? You were planning that. That's great.
I didn't have that queued up.
I think everybody in journalism has been trying to find a way to incorporate that phrase into this story. Heather Sharone, you know, watching these recordings, Danny Solis, a former alderman turned government mole, is wearing a camera. He's wearing a wire. He's got a camera set up in his office. It's kind of amazing how steely he is and convincing he is when he's talking to Ed Burke about these schemes, is it not?
Absolutely. You see him sort of playing the role prescribed to him by the FBI, and that's part of what I assume we will hear from Burke's attorneys, that basically Solis was out to save his own skin and was saying whatever he could to get Ed Burke to do whatever looked a little bit hinky. But the fact of the matter is that you hear Ed Burke time and time again in his own words asking Danny Solis, why have these people not hired me yet? And if they don't hire me, he uses the profanity, you know, he says they're never going to get on the agenda. What I thought was really interesting is that this is, you know, I have covered Ed Burke for a long time now, and this is a glimpse of how he operated behind the scenes, which of course I have never been privy to before, and it's truly fascinating, sort of this, you know, sort of mixture of steely sort of, well, if you want X, you're going to need to do Y, and sort of old school Chicago, you know, charm. We heard him explain the genesis of the cliche, nobody, nobody sent. And it's really fascinating to hear from people like former Water Department Commissioner Barrett Murphy, who said he was terrified of Ed Burke. He was terrified of getting on the wrong side of Ed Burke because he knew that that meant that his department's budget was potentially at risk. And we heard something very similar from one of the officials at the field museums. And it's sort of this, you know, prosecutors are slowly painting this picture of this essentially reign of terror that Ed Burke led at City Hall, where that if he was in the little bit displeased with you, he was going to in no small way make your life a living hell. And the prosecutor's argument is that he did that to benefit himself.
So if prosecutors are describing this reign of terror, Chris Jones, what's the story the defense tells?
Well, I guess they have to say that he's, you know, that's just his style. That's just part of the Chicago way. He wasn't really going to do. Who knows? I mean, it is very difficult looking at what the prosecutor.
Well, is there any interpretation of these videos and these quotes where Ed Burke is not trying to shake these developers down for business for his tax firm?
Well, when you read them, and the cash register is not yet wrong. What would that interpretation possibly be?
Well, during cross examination, Burke's lawyers have basically said, "Look, he didn't actually get any money," which is true. He never actually got.
Neither did Rod Blagojevich.
He never actually sort of got anybody, and so this is an unusual alleged bribery case, and that we don't have, you know, gold bars in the closet.
Right.
We don't have envelopes full of cash being stuffed in somebody's pocket. But the fact of the matter is that the prosecutors have, I think, built this sort of pyramid of sort of how Ed Burke operated, and they say it was an illegal attempt to monetize his elected
position. And I guess it's not illegal to be grumpy about not getting what you want. So theoretically, they could say it's some version of that.
When you tie that to city business,
right.
That might be illegal.
Right, and also offering Solis, you know, a piece of the action, I would think.
He said himself, I believe in sharing the wealth.
Yes, yes.
And it's amazing that Solis, who was caught up in a lot of problems of his own, gets off scot-free for doing what he did. But I'm looking at these videos, his hands aren't even shaking.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a brilliant actor. He's pulling all of this off, and you'd have to think that this is about as nerve-wracking a thing as you can undertake.
I think that, you know, the wild thing is sort of what Heather was getting at, that the public persona of Ed, you know, having seen him around town for many years,
right,
with the suits, with this charm, And now all of a sudden you see this. It's fascinating.
He kind of just sounds like an average Chicago war healer with the way he talks. All right, well, let's move on to some of the other big stories of this week. Melody Mercado, so the construction on the winterized tent encampment has started in Brighton Park. When will migrants move in?
We honestly don't know. There's been so many questions surrounding the site, the base camps in general, before the site was solidified. We, for many weeks, were trying to figure out when the construction would start. Construction finally started this week. We saw some of the frames for the tents being put in place. We just don't know when people are going to move in. I think the big thing hanging over this site is the environmental report, which the administration promised it would be releasing today. And everyone checked their emails right before the show started today, and no one has received anything.
And we're looking at some video from today of the camps going up. That's right, Heather Sharon. So if viewers don't know, there are a lot of concerns about environmental remediation on this formerly industrial site. The administration did promise a report on that. How come they're not being forthcoming with that yet?
I don't know the answer to that question. I wish I did. So when I spoke with the mayor's spokesperson just before coming on air, he asked all of us, not just me, to file Freedom of Information Act requests for this report. So apparently the report does exist. I don't know that anybody has seen it yet. The question involves toxic metals on the site, which we know were found on the site, and that Alderwoman Julia Ramirez believes makes the site unfit to house migrants. So the question is that I want to know, what have they done to sort of remediate those toxic metals, and what is the worst case scenario for the people who will be living on this site for as long as 60 days? I think the larger question involves transparency, and it involves how the mayor sort of went about creating the site, because as I asked him earlier this week, why start construction on this site before you have this environmental report out there to give everybody a chance to say, okay, here's what it was, here's what we're doing, and here's what that will mean. We're now in a situation where we have, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 800 or so men, women, and children sleeping on the floor of police stations in a very cold, wet week. And this is sort of a potentially better living situation that may pose some sort of unknown environmental threat, adding perhaps insult to injury.
And as we understand, another site in Little Village at a CVS lot is being constructed today. Chris Jones, what do you make of the mayor withholding this.
I mean, the broader question is it's ridiculous to not immediately be forthcoming with that report, to not stand up in front of everybody's microphone and say, look, this people have a right to know.
Does it suggest there might be something in that report that's disturbing?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the state is paying for a large portion of this, so I think one could deduce that the state doesn't think that there's anything terrible in this report. Otherwise, they would not have gone ahead with allowing their money to be used for it. So if you want my view on it, I think it's probably going to be okay in the end. But that doesn't change the fact that the report's not out there. It's not been made public, even though they promised that it would be. People shouldn't have to file FOIA requests to get something as central to that. People are sleeping on the, you know, obviously the tents have a floor, but this was a zinc smelter? I mean, why is it even on that site to begin with, you might argue? And given that it is, surely Chicagoans have a right to know that that's safe, and the migrants themselves have a right to know that that's safe.
All right, on another topic, Phil Thompson, do you think Chicagoans have a right to go to city council and watch the proceedings with their own eyes in the council chambers? Because now Mayor Johnson and council chambers and the city council is trying to kind of change that.
That's baffling to me. I mean, we were just talking about having to make FOIA requests, which is, you know, just you talk about the antithesis of transparency. Well, this is just going to the nth degree to keep the public out of this process, which is the actual wrong message since this whole saga began when they started bringing in migrants having to accept migrants. So I don't understand what their thinking is.
Melanie Mercado, do you understand what their thinking is? Why are they proposing these new rules whereby you can only come to these meetings if you were invited by older people and you're just a member of the general public? You're out of luck. You got to go to the third floor, the windowed-in gallery.
I wish I understood. I think I would have a very high-paying job if I did. But I think here it's sending the message that we only want you close to your elected representatives if you are specifically invited by them. basically showing you need connections to be close to your elected officials. And if not, you have to sit on this balcony view enclosed with all this glass. It just doesn't seem very accessible. It's very sort of against what we heard from the administration earlier today about being accessible and being transparent. And I feel like it's sending the wrong message to constituents all over the city.
Heather Sharone, is there a legitimate safety concern that older people have? I mean, we have seen some very unruly council and committee meetings in recent months?
Sure. So there's no doubt that the past several months of city council meetings have gotten completely out of control at times. Twice, the security in charge of the chambers have had to clear those galleries because of people yelling and making racist statements and threatening older people. So, you know, there's no doubt, you know, some sort of security issue that's happening. The flip side of this is that, you know, I've been covering the city council long enough under three mayors now, where I've seen people hauled out of those chambers for sneezing too loudly. And the mayor, who came up as an organizer and sort of very, you know, was very comfortable in sort of protests, did not want to enforce those rules as his predecessors have been, saying that they had been overly enforced. And perhaps that's true as well. The fact of the matter is that the pendulum now has swung so far to the right, and now it's swung all the way back to the other side, that now your average Chicago and would not be able to see their elected officials in doing their work in their name, paid by their money. And I think that the mayor, who's not taking questions about this since the policy was first reported by WBEZ in what I thought was a great article, he hasn't been asked to account for this change, and
well,
he will be.
And we should let viewers know that there are many layers of security that you have to go through, metal detectors. There's lots of police officers that guard the area. They try to make it as fortified as possible. Chris Jones, is there an open meetings violation potentially here with this policy?
The Better Government Association says that they're looking into legal action about it. The ACLU has said they're looking into legal action about it. So effectively, it's annoyed almost everybody on left and right. I just feel this administration won't succeed unless it reboots this whole notion of transparency, and that it has more confidence in itself, and it develops more openness, and that the mayor is willing to have a closer relationship with media and to answer Chicagoans' questions. I think it comes up in topic after topic after topic. I don't know what the genesis of it is. Maybe it's fear. Maybe it's worry about, you know, things going awry. But in the end of the day, if you're the mayor of this city, you just have to be open and transparent. And they failed time and time again at that.
You think he might go back on this?
I just wanted to underscore Chris's point. It's supposed to be a progressive administration. Does this sound progressive?
As the Lightfoot administration was supposed to be. And that administration was a reaction to the perceived lack of transparency in the previous administration. We kind of keep seeing this cycle repeat itself.
Time is a flat circle.
It certainly is, especially after COVID. Heather, do you think the mayor might hear this criticism and say, okay, we'll rethink this?
I mean, you know, I think that he is somebody who has said, pledged to be responsive to people, and that he has acknowledged, you know, hey, I will make missteps and I will correct those when they're made. I think this is one of those tests that every Chicago mayor faces at one point or another once they take office. And I think that this is one of those incidents, you know, sort of along with everything else we've been talking about tonight, that will sort of start to paint the picture of his first year in office.
All right, Melody Mercado, it's hard to believe this, but election 2024 is already underway, even though we've got another 28 days or so, 30 days until 2024 officially begins in the calendar year. But what are the big races to follow as folks start to file their nominating petitions this week?
I think the big number one ticket is going to be who's going to be running for state's attorney, and then who's, of course, going to be replacing Brandon Johnson's seat on the Cook County Commissioner. Those, I think, are the top two that people are going to be looking at. I know so far there have been about 55 people that have submitted their signatures to run for various Cook County-wide positions.
And Phil Thompson, every year there are folks that line up early in the morning because they want to be the first person on the ballot. They want to get that spot because they think it might give them an advantage. When you go to vote and it's a race you're not that familiar with, do you just go with the first person on the ballot?
Well, you know, I kind of do eeny, meeny, miny, mo type of thing, you know, to see how
I'm
that
sure
turns
you do.
No, but I think...
You take the Chicago Tribune voter guide with you, or the
right.
WTTW
yes,
voter guide.
That's right. Yes, yes, yes. No, I do one better. I take Chris Jones with me.
Right, into,
yeah, right there. It's like, okay, thanks for informing me, Chris. But no, I think I just wanted to say I can't think of more of a lightning rod position that Kim Fox has left than her old job, you know, so... More power to whoever really wants that job.
All right, well, Chris Jones, we do have a few people that do want that job. We have a judge, Eileen yeah. O'Neill Burke. You've yeah. got the Clayton Harris, who yeah. Had run the ports yeah. System, a longtime attorney. Who stands out to you?
I don't know at this point. I mean, we haven't, you know, we're going to certainly endorse in that race and see who we like. We haven't finished that process yet or even really started that process because, we know, obviously, we're just at that point
we
where this is all
forget
beginning.
To mention Bob Fioretti,
No,
course,
we should not. No, we should not.
Because it's an election year, Bob Fioretti is running for something.
But it feels right. It's going to be a high-profile race, and it's that position has been more in the news than at any other position in where we live.
Do you see Chicagoans swinging the pendulum back toward the middle after having a more progressive prosecutor?
I do. But I, you know, you can't tell at this point, really. But I do. I think, you know, and that would be good for the city.
All right, it's good for the city when the Bears win, Phil Thompson. Although they didn't score a touchdown, they beat a team starting its fourth-string quarterback. Should fans be excited that the team and Justin Fields have turned a corner this year?
Have they turned a corner?
That's why I'm asking you.
You know, well, I don't think anyone in our newsroom knows or in sports media. I don't even think Eberflus knows whether he's turned a corner or not. I mean, there's a bigger picture, at play here than just one win against a depleted Minnesota Vikings team. And that's where the Fields is the quarterback of the future, and I don't think that was solved here. Or at this administration, you know, from the coach on up, should be in place. And
how about the general manager, Ryan Poles, who brought in the coach and put the talent on the team, albeit he inherited Justin Fields?
No, he's included in that. You know, he's a former offensive lineman. I have not liked the way the offensive line looked, although it's improved recently. I think everything is on the table. Here's what's at stake. You know, you have what could be a first and a fourth overall pick, or first and a sixth, wherever those wind up landing after the season. This is an opportunity for the Bears to reset and build a foundation of what will be the future. It's also an opportunity to really royally screw this up if you had the wrong people pulling the levers.
The Bears have never done that, have they, Phil Thompson?
You know,
fans have PTSD at this point when these big decisions
yeah, I mean,
come to
so
the
many
fore.
Chicago sports teams just consistently get it right.
Well, maybe the Blackhawks got it right, terminating their co-captain, Corey Perry. What was the incident that led to his termination?
Well, they're being very close-lipped about that, but Perry came out with an apology and suggested that it had a lot to do with alcohol. There's at least one report that said that there was an alcohol-infused event where he behaved in an inappropriate way. There aren't a lot more substantiated details beyond that, but, you know, it's a big black eye for the Blackhawks organization. You know, like you mentioned, this is a alternate captain. This is an organization that can't afford many black eyes for the reasons that we all know.
They're trying to move on from sex scandal from several years ago. Right. On a better note with the Blackhawks, Connor Bedard, Rookie of the Month, easy to surmise he's going to be Rookie of the Year.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, he's already leading in points. He's just, everything is advertised. He certainly deserved this honor for this month. That Florida trip, you know, he was flirting with a hat trick in back-to-back games.
Wow.
As a rookie. So, and he's still
not
satisfied.
He can barely drive. He's barely old enough to drive, and he's one of the best players in the NHL.
Yes. I mean, but when you talk to him about it, he almost kind of frowns at you like, you know, I expect this, you know. You may be impressed, but I expect more. So, you know, he certainly
is not lacking for confidence in himself. So I wouldn't bet against them in the Rookie of the Year race.
All right, well, we have not been lacking in good conversation on this panel, but we are out of time. So our thanks to Chris Jones, Heather Sharone, Melody Mercado, and Phil Thompson. We're back to wrap things up right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by Alexandra and John Nichols, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors. Tonight's presentation of Chicago Tonight, Week in Review, is made possible in part by Ann and Rich Carr and the Mullenhauer Progressive Philanthropic Fund in honor of Ida Mullenhauer, supporting quality journalism.
That's our show for this Friday night. Don't forget you can get Chicago Tonight and the Week in Review streamed on Facebook, YouTube, and our website, WTTW.com/news. And now for the Week in Review, I'm Paris Schutz. Thank you so much for watching. Stay healthy and safe and have a wonderful weekend. Chris Jones, we also have news this week that some airlines are trying to ground O'Hare's renovation plans, multi-million dollar renovation plans.
Well, the airlines are cheap and they want O'Hare to be affordable for them. All they want to do is have the ability to move passengers and not have to pay a lot of money. And that really fights with the city's desire to have this splendiferous
night
gateway.
But they already signed this agreement.
Yeah, but they now say, but we had heartburn when we signed it and there have been massive cost overruns.
And we have to remind everybody, because they're the ones paying for it. It's their fees, it's gate fees,
right.
It's all
sorts of
different fees.
And it's very expensive at O'Hare as compared to, say, Charlotte, which is why there's all these flights in Charlotte now and far fewer at O'Hare. And they have all the costs.
Closed captioning is made possible in part by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, wishing all a happy and healthy holiday season.